back on the farm.
Hello there, you're just in time for Hillbilly Heartbeats of the Air, and here is Mae Kennedy McCord.
Thank you, Jim Kendrick, and how on earth did you get out here, Jim?
I made it.
You did? My, I thought about you this morning. Good land. Well, how did anybody get here? Way out on Glenstone. How did I get here? Well, thanks to Henry, and we're under the worst. Well, I never saw such. Isn't a blizzard, but the snow and the slick. My. And dangerous. I think I'd have been afraid to trust my own kids to drive, even. But you know, Henry, he's a driver. How do you like the weather, anyway? Well, we need some winter. We have to have it. They say a warm winter makes a fat graveyard. That's an old, old saying, and believe me, it turns out that way. Even the statisticians say so. A warm winter makes a fat graveyard. This kind of weather won't hurt anybody if they'll wrap warm and keep their feet dry. It's healthful, but I don't like it, I'll tell you that. Well, still, weather never did upset my grumbling box like it does some people. I don't mind weather. I just don't mind it. I never did. I just worry about people, that's all I do, and weather, who have nothing to eat and are cold. I can't get them off my mind. Little children, old folks, sick folks, even the birds. I've run out of anything to feed the birds, and I don't know where to get any food. I wish I knew where it is they get that stuff they throw out to them, grain or something. I've been feeding them all the bread I could get a hold of and the leftovers. Poor little birds, both cold and hungry. I have such a heart always for the little cold things, the helpless things. Helpless from the hunter and from the cold and wind. Elizabeth Coatsworth, a noted American poet, wrote a little poem one time about the rabbits standing outside a rich home and looking in at a banquet. And in one verse, the little rabbit said, "Fires they have in a home, flowers on a tall white stem, and the thought of a fox or an owl never seems to trouble them. They laugh and eat and are warm. Their food is ready at hand. While hungry out in the cold, we little rabbits stand." We see them licking their paws, their eyes on an upraised spoon. We who dance hungry and wild under a winter's moon. And oh, then Lou Surratt, you know, he wrote perhaps the greatest poem about, poems in general about animals ever written, perhaps, in the English language. But his Four Little Foxes is so famous, whose mother was caught in a trap. It's been translated into many languages. I've read it 100 times, it seems to me, for years. "Walk softly, wind, forbear the bitter blow. Her feet within a trap, her blood upon the snow, the Four Little Foxes saw their mother go. Walk softly, wind. Go lightly, march. Oh, give them no alarm. When I covered them with boughs to shelter them from harm, the thin blue foxes suckled at my arm. Go lightly. Step softly with your rampant hurricane. Nuzzling each other and whimpering with pain, the new little foxes are starving in the rain. Step softly, wind." And then I used to read Little Brown Bear Went Upstream to Die. You know, little brown bear who was shot by the hunters and he knew he had to die. So he went upstream to die away alone where no one could see him, bleeding, turning the water red. Little brown bear went upstream to die. Oh, yes, friends, it has always been debatable to me whether any human being had the moral or even a legal right to shoot and kill any helpless thing. Well, I guess maybe it's a law of an eye for an eye sometimes and a tooth for a tooth, but I have my great doubts and I always will have. Now, I want to say here before going further that with great concern, I learned yesterday that my dear friend, Mr. Charles Iden of West Plains, one of the gifted poets of this part of the country whose poetry I've often read to you, and a lifelong editor, He was editor for untold years of the Journal at Crocker, Missouri. He had that brilliant brother editor, you know, J. Iden, I think, at Monette. And a grand gentleman, Charles Iden is, of fine pioneer lineage. He's quite ill in St. John's Hospital. He came only yesterday. They brought him. And maybe many of his friends all over this big Ozark country don't know about it. His beloved wife, Josie, is right there by his side. I talked to her last night. Try and see him, if only for a moment. And see his wife, Josie. If the weather lets up at all, I must see him. And this morning, he may be listening in if the friends get the little transistor radio to him that they're going to try to rush out there before 8:45. And I had already made up my mind to read one of my favorite poems of his, that's a funny thing, before I heard about him being sick. I want to read it as we begin the new year, that we might not forget the old things, the things that carry with them our heritage, the simple things. That's all that counts in life, is the simple things. This poem of Mr. Iden's is The Old Things. There are so many old things that we should not forget. The yellow rose and blue flags and dainty mignonette. The ice wool shawls, so lovely. You remember those? And those fascinators, too? Boot jacks and nutmeg graters, rag carpets red and blue. The hymn tunes like Old Hundred, the old folks used to sing. These old things near forgotten, what memories they bring. Among the lovely old things, the spinning wheel and looms that lent so much of color to those old living rooms. There was a big old Bible with pages where they wrote the weddings, births, and dyings, or some historic note. Those plain old-fashioned sermons, the honesty of men. We somehow need the old things to set us right again. Yes, indeed, Charles Iden, we do. We need them in the new year. We must not leave them behind. If we do, we are sunk, the old things. Hundreds of people, yes, hundreds, write to me year in and year out, telling me how they love for me to tell about the old things. And not all old people that write to me either about it. The young people love them, the younger people. They are unwritten history. They are the backbone of history. They are knowledge not found in books. You know, a great man said recently, great big businessman in America, he said, the whole world is getting mighty tired of stuffed shirts and pink tees and cocktails and silly maudlin twaddle and the god of money and the froth of society. The world longs for sunsets and running brooks and the cows coming home at night and the humming of an old tune and the crackle of a fireplace and an old Bible with tear marks on its pages and an honest dollar earned and a man's word that was as good as his bond. That's what this great man said. Yes, we need the old things. You know, I think I just have to read for you what I've been asked so many times over and over right here this morning. I didn't know whether to read it again or not. A poem that everyone likes and nobody seems to have it. C.C. Williford has read it on his programs. Slim Wilson has read it on the air. And I have read it. And it seems foolish to repeat it, but it will bear repeating. For it will bring a throb of memory to many a listener. It's that inimitable poem, Sleeping at the Foot of the Bed. My, how many of us have done just that. And how I wish I might tonight crawl in at the foot of the bed of my mother and father when company had come and was all over the house. Or even just when it was bitter cold and my brother and I we were little and we'd beg to sleep at the foot of the bed. We'd beg to sleep there. So here it is, written by some chap who'd certainly been there. Did you ever sleep at the foot of the bed when the weather was whizzing cold, when the wind was a-whistling round the house and the moon was yellow as gold, and give your good warm feather bed up to Aunt Lizzie and Uncle Fred? Too many kinfolks on a bad raw night, and you went to the foot of the bed. For some darn reason, the coldest night of the season, you was sent to the foot of the bed. I could always wait till the old folks ate and then eat the leavings with grace, and the teacher could keep me after school, and I'd still have a smile on my face. I could wear the big boy's wore-out clothes or let sister have my sled, but it always did get my nanny goat to have to sleep at the foot of the bed. They tell me some folks never knowed what it was to have company all over the place, to wrestle for cover through a long winter night with a big foot setting in your face, or with cold toenails a-scratching your back and a footboard a-scrubbing your head. I'll tell the wide world you ain't lost a thing never sleeping at the foot of the bed. You can live just as gladly and die just as sadly and never sleep at the foot of the bed. It was fine enough when the kinfolks come. The kids brought brand new games. You could see how fat the old folks was and learn all the babies' names. We had biscuits and custard and chicken pie and always got Sunday fed. But you knowed mighty well when night come on you was headed for the foot of the bed. You couldn't get by it. There was no use to try it. You was headed for the foot of the bed. I've slept there and I've done it many a time in this land of the brave and the free. And in this all-fired battle of life, it's done left its mark on me. For I'm always a-struggling around at the foot instead of getting ahead. And I don't think it's caused by a doggone thing but sleeping at the foot of the bed. You know, in St. Louis, I read that poem one time, and then I went to lunch with some very fine ladies. And a woman said, Mrs. Picard, you read such a cunning little poem. Oh, you were just joking, weren't you? No child ever slept at the foot of the bed, did he? I said, yes, two of them, me and Abraham Lincoln. He laughed at me. Well, goodbye. And God keep you all through this great new year, and may we walk softly, and may we choose wisely, and may the men who head this great nation pray often and earnestly, for we're like the old fella down in the hills catching the bear. He said the further we went, the fearder we got. So goodbye, and I'll be seeing you next Saturday morning, the Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.